welcome to True Wealth, your tangible assets advisor. This is Kevin Walter, your host. True Wealth, as you're getting a little used to hearing, is sponsored by Coins Plus in Spokane. Coins Plus been around about, I say 20 years, but I think I'm definitely officially 21 now. I guess that means I'm legal drinking age as a business. I don't know what that means, but that could be kind of dangerous. At least I guess I'm done with the juvenile delinquency part of the business and moving on to becoming an adult. Anyway, Coins Plus is your full-service rare coin and precious metals broker, dealer, and depository service. We buy and sell all forms of precious metals. We specialize in investment portfolios. We offer the highest-rated privately held depository service in a massive area. In other words, many, many states, probably in the top few in the western United States. People claim all kinds of funny stuff. Ours is a Class 2A vault system built from the ground up. Incredible. And, you know, there's another vault. There's another place that offers some private depository service. And they were telling somebody there's a 1 to 10 rating and all this stuff. There's no 1 to 10 rating. They go Class 1, 2, and 3. There is Class 3 is nuke proof. It's what the Federal Reserve uses. Class 2 is phenomenal. I mean, Class 2, when we were putting in the vaults, the guy who brought him in was like, geez, you think you're a little overkill here? And that's all he does is travel around the country. They bring semi-trucks full of all the panels and everything. And he said, you think you're a little overkill here? I said, well, I just want to make sure no one will ever get in. He goes, don't worry, they won't. I said, well, they'd need a tank to get through that, wouldn't they? And he goes, no, a tank will go over it. But he said a tank is not going through it. He said a tank would just go right over it. They're built. This building is built from the ground up with incredible security in mind. From everything to do with the design, there's extensive security footage. There's the building's built into different cordon. It's cordoned off into separate corridors. So there's always somebody somewhere that can see what's going on in the building in a private, in a highly secure area. Walls of concrete, steel, Kevlar, bullet and bomb resistant polycarbonate windows. So if anybody ever tried something in one part of the building, like the showroom, there's other parts of the building that people are watching them. They don't even know. There's a lot of parts of the building, we'll just say, are very private. No one ever other than specific staff ever know about, extremely high secure layers, we'll call them. And so basically they maintain a lot of authority. It's even built for, I don't know how to put it, but it's designed to protect ourselves. We'll put it that way. And when you use our depository service, it's private, it's anonymous. You're off the grid. It's available 24/7. How about that? The access is available 6 days a week when we're here, and you just sign in and sign out. Again, it's all private. It's not reported anywhere. I've pointed out that the IRS gives you a deduction on your taxes if you disclose your safe deposit box location, folks. Think about that for a minute. Hope you're smarter than that. And the banks have no liability insurance whatsoever. It is not uncommon for banks to be sued for letting people's boxes be breached. B of A even went through a phase where they were putting safe deposit boxes in an open area of the bank so people could go access their safe deposit boxes out in the open. Well, guess what? People came in with crowbars and whatever and tools and were able to get at them. I've been in safe deposit boxes, box rooms in banks for hours buying estates. No cameras anywhere. And if somebody wanted, they could absolutely just work on those boxes. The difference with our boxes, too, is their vault quality. Each box is an individual vault with, you know, like inch-thick steel doors and recessed to not be pryable and all this stuff. Each vault, each door is individual. People get their own private keys. We don't. We have a guard key. We don't have the key to the vault. If you abandon the vault or whatever, the safe deposit box, We have to go through a whole process of redrilling the locks and everything. It's very expensive. That's why we require you to return the keys. People will actually rent a box and then they want to close it out and they lose one of the keys. Well, that puts us out. And so that's the one thing you have to do if you have a box that's hanging onto your keys. But just know they're very secure. They're very private. Depends on your financial situation. I know people who have gone through some very tough, difficult financial times, and they're able to keep it private, anonymous, and completely detached. One thing as kind of a wild side note that just flew through my mind, so maybe there's a reason. I've seen a couple situations where people of significant, what I would consider significant wealth, have had boxes here with a significant quantity. They end up with a significant other in their life, or at least they think so. That significant other has encouraged them to bring the material home and put it in a private safe for, quote, safekeeping. And then down the road, these people discover that that significant other had ulterior motives in doing so. In other words, they wanted to get their hands on it. They wanted to access it. And of course, the persons that it's happened to, and I've seen it happen a number of times, oh no, that person would never do that to me. Well, there are people out there that discover if you have wealth and they go for it. A rich man, Proverbs says, has many friends, but a poor man has none, which is sad. But sadly, in other words, the point is a rich man, the appearance of wealth will create false friendships, creates false relationships. They're not real, okay? People will use you for your appearance of wealth. You may not think you appear wealthy, but you may be. To somebody, you may have enough. I've seen it in every situation. I've seen handicapped people or disabled people, everything, folks. It's sad. It's not good. You know, the Christianity doesn't always prevent that kind of behavior. The sad thing is people who want to prey on the vulnerability of others' trust will often disguise themselves as believers. They will call themselves a believer, and they will do that to get inside the circle of trust and to get at you. So please be wise. Christ says, wise as serpents, innocent as doves. If you've got valuables, be very careful. Who has access to it? Frankly, I've seen it all, folks. I've seen people put the wrong person on their safe deposit box. I've seen mothers put their runaway, you know, in other words, train wreck-lived sons on their boxes while they're scrambling with drugs and whatever. I've seen the sons gut the box. You might say, well, why would you allow that to happen? Hey, here's how we work. If you trust somebody enough to put them on your box, we have no right. The minute that person's name is on the box, they have every bit of access to that box that you do. It is not our place to judge whether or not someone should or shouldn't be removing from the box. I had a gal ask me the other day, so you keep track of what's in our box? Absolutely not. It's your box. We have no clue. We don't want a clue. It's private, okay? If you want to keep records of it, that's fine. We have liability insurance that protects against our errors, but you know, other than that, you're on your own. I mean, all safe deposit boxes are the same. I mean, whether you're at a bank or not, ours are, you know, and even acts of God, I don't know what could really destroy a safe deposit box, but I mean, or at least the vault, but, you know, we're protected for liability reasons. Banks are not. So if a bank employee screws up, leaves the door open to your box and someone steals it, you have no recourse. You can sue and go through all this stuff, and you know how much money they have and how much money you have, and you can imagine how difficult it's going to be. Here it's different. Enough said about that. Just please be wise. When you're dealing with precious metals and whatnot, I don't care what you do. I spoke last week of a situation with really close personal friends. I mean, dear friends, the widow of a very good friend who another quote-unquote Christian stockbroker has just been working to undermine our relationship and to undermine her trust in me. And folks, this is not what Jesus Christ calls us to do or be. That's called greed and jealousy. Jealousy is an emotion we are not allowed to have. You will not find anywhere in the Bible where there's any good use of jealousy. Anger, on the other hand, yeah. Righteous indignation, yeah. I mean, but it's got to be for the right reason. It's injustice. In other words, when you see a child being abused or molested, you better get angry. If you don't, then there's something wrong with you. Jesus or God gave us that knack, that talent, that ability, that emotion, whatever you want to call it, fight or flight, right? I mean, if something's happening to us, we need to deal with it. But he did not give us the emotion of jealousy. The devil did. Jealousy is the result of breaching the commandments on covetousness. Jealousy wants to destroy somebody who has something that you perceive as a threat or that you wish you had or whatever. It's bad, folks. Do not allow jealousy or greed to get into your life. Don't ever, you know, in Christianity, I'm going out on a limb here, but I mean, we can tend to get a little judgmental. And there's a difference. We are to judge. And when people say, judge not, lest ye be judged, what they're saying, they're misquoting the scripture. The point of the scripture is take the plank out of your own eye before you try to remove the speck out of your brother's. No doubt, right? We know that. But that doesn't mean you can't judge. You judge every second of every day. That is what your existence is all about. It says we will one day judge the angels. We are definitely put here to judge. We are going to be God's judges. You cannot help but to judge all day long. I mean, a judge is a form of analysis that you engage in all the time. So don't misquote that verse at all, I guess. But I've seen it. I've seen it regularly misquoted. I'm trying to look it up. It's kind of weird, this computer. I'm trying to look up judge, and it's trying to give me the book of Judges. That's really nice. Thanks a lot, guys. there's all kinds of stuff here, but not the one. Here's the different misinterpretations. Do not judge so that you will not be judged. Matthew 7:1, for in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Now, this is sort of a miss. Since I've gotten into the Greek and Hebrew heavily, there's a lot of poor translations out there. the word for judge is krino in Greek, and it really means to put on a higher level, to put yourself, it's to approve yourself, to raise yourself in esteem, or to prefer your thinking. It says you're to be of an opinion, deem, think, etc. So in other words, what it's saying, to pronounce an opinion concerning your perception of right and wrong. It's not what the problem is. It's not according to God's standards here. This is according to your standards. And that's what he's saying. Don't be preferential or partial unless you want others to do the same to you. Like, oh, did you see how short that girl's dress was? I can't believe it. Or, oh my gosh, what Christian would dress like that? Oh, did you see the car they got? Yeah, they shouldn't be driving to church in a car like that. That's just bad. They should be giving all that money to God. Or, oh, did you see the house? Those Christians live in that big house. They don't need all that space. When in reality, God may not have blessed you the same way. It's not your business. Or look at those children of theirs. If those, they can't be good Christian parents. Those children are just misbehaving. Or whatever. I don't know, folks. I don't specialize in it, so I can't tell you. But that's not our job, okay? We need to love God. Christ said, love your neighbor as yourself, right? What is that? The thing about that is that's kind of a slam on us, isn't it? To, as you love yourself, how much do you love yourself? Think about it. I've discussed this before, but if you have too much of a love for yourself, what happens? That's a big calling. But if you have humility and you've died to self, you can be, you know, it's not as big of a calling, is it? So I think if you think about that from the proper perspective, I think you get the point. The point is, you know, we need to love our neighbors. And we need to love our neighbors at the same level that we love ourselves. But we take care of ourselves, we preserve ourselves, we feed ourselves, we look out for ourselves, we make sure we're comfortable, we make sure we're taken care of, right? That's what they're saying, is don't be a narcissist that leaves your neighbor in the dust. So many people do that. When I was in high school, this just came to my mind, I was living in Great Falls, Montana. We had an earthquake, a pretty sizable one. I don't know what, I think it was a 7.1 or something. It was big. It hit the town. And luckily out in Great Falls, everything's built for, you know, 75 mile an hour winds on a regular basis. So it's tough. And we had this earthquake, and I was in first period English, and all the desks in the room started sliding across the room. I lost my focus, my vision, because everything was jiggling. I didn't know what was going on. Our teacher had his coat and hat by the door of the room. He said nothing. He ran, literally, grabbed his coat and grabbed his hat and ran out of the room, leaving all the students behind. We didn't know. After the earthquake subsided, he came back. Of course, I was the one bold, brazen one that said, "What was that?" The earthquake. And I'm like, wait a minute, you abandoned us. You left us here. And then, of course, he and I had our share of conflicts on a regular basis because I was rather brazen always. But the thing was, is he abandoned the entire class to preserve himself. That is the exact opposite of what we're supposed to be. We should be sacrificing ourselves. During the shooting in Vegas, there were many accounts of these off-duty police officers literally shielding people, trying to usher them to safety, standing in front of them in case a bullet flew. They were there to take the bullet for these people they'd never met. That is love. Jesus said, you know, what is the ultimate act of love is to lay down your life for another. These police officers, that's what they were doing, okay? Now, the problem is we always get these terrible stories about police officers. We get these horrendous, overblown, you know, morons, to be candid. I mean, I've seen stuff, I've seen videos recently or a while ago of, you know, a police officer that's in a hospital demanding a patient's medical records, okay, with no warrant. And the lady's like, "I'm sorry, I can't do it." And he's saying, "If you don't give it to me, I'm going to arrest you." And then a supervisor comes out and says, "I'm sorry, we can't." And he just grabs the lady, the nurse, and just starts pounding on her. Of course, you know, later on, you know, he's apologizing and it's all dropped and he's probably given 2 weeks paid leave or something. And that's the biggest problem, I think. I think I was talking to a police officer the other day, and he was saying the biggest problem he runs into with the criminal justice system is that these criminals that just repetitively break the law and breach people's homes and rip them off don't have harsh enough punishments. He said they're in and out like a revolving door. I agree with him. When they're a threat to society, if someone will break into your home, once they violate your personal space on multiple occasions, I say get rid of them, lock them up, get them out of here, because society needs to be safe from these types of people. The same applies to police officers. If those rogue officers that are off the hook, they need to be reprimanded and punished heavily to set an example for the others. I'm not saying that, you know, they need to be, I don't want to hyper judge. I understand. I know a lot of really cool, level-headed, awesome cops. It's not an easy job, and a lot of them are very level-headed. I'm impressed, to be candid with you. a lot of the police I know, just how cool they stay. And actually, they develop a level, at least a number that I know, they develop a level of compassion for these people that are strung out on drugs and stuff. And they begin to understand how, what a crutch these people's lives is in. And, you know, just, and granted, they become evil and God hates that and they're destructive to society. But there is a personal side to those people. If they're willing to be contrite spirit and submit before God and repent, you know, maybe there's hope. But for some reason, once they get that heavy, once that heavy taste of drugs comes into somebody, and I'm not talking, you know, there's different kinds of drugs, but, you know, a lot of people have their body rewired at a young age and whatnot. But anyway, I'm just saying there's a lot of cool cops and I'm bouncing all over the place. So anyway, I was on the judge thing and I went, you know, that's where it goes. Judge not that you not be judged, for in the way you judge, you'll be judged. And by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. If you're a judgmental, undermining gossip, it's coming back at you. It's full circle. It's karma. I love the word karma, and people that are believers hate it when I say that. But folks, just think, God made natural law. There is a system of law in play in this world where he says, do not be deceived. I am not mocked. You sow it, you reap it. So bad, get evil. So good, get life. That's what he says. Now, that's the Kevin Walter translation. But the fact of the matter is, God's not mocked. His system rules and reigns. I grew up, my dad was a bail bondsman. My dad used to constantly comment on what absolute terrible, hideous luck these people had relevant to their lifestyle. There were families that would sleep all day and steal all night. And he would say no one, and he meant no one on the face of the planet had worse luck than they did because of karma. Because of, and I say karma because it does not matter what you believe, because God of the universe is God, period. When these people that do these heinous acts of violence, these Muslim terrorists, and they say Allahu Akbar, they're saying Allah is greater, not God is good like the media tells you. They're saying Allah is greatest or greater. Better than the God that we worship. Allah is the devil. Fact. This there was this misnomer for years that we're all worshiping the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. False. Not even in the least. They are worshiping the God of Baal worship. They are worshiping the moon god Allah. That is not the God of the Bible. It is the devil. That's why this heinous, hideous stuff is happening. Can you even fathom somebody thinking that they're doing the bidding of God by killing innocent women and children by driving them over in a car? Where on earth could that ever even logically or rationally be justified as a societal behavior of any benefit whatsoever? There's no way. Absolutely. Just use your logic and common sense. These people, they're kids most of the time, or young men, they're brainwashed. They're absolutely brainwashed with lies. They want to get blessed. They want recognition. They want to be known. And ISIS loves this garbage. We've got to absolutely destroy this thing. And I'm going to be candid, folks. Our founding fathers warned us over and over again against Islam, okay? Period. There was no question about their position. And we have not heeded that at all. There are Jefferson, Washington, they all wrote about it. They all discussed the fact that it is not possible to integrate Islam with our system of freedom of religion. And this nation was built on a Judeo-Christian foundation, I guess you can call it. Period. It's written all throughout our history that this is a necessary component of who we are. Jefferson went up against these people. Hopefully it'll work, but there's never been a time. Now, let's kind of move on and talk about the glue that holds all this stuff together and unites it equally. That glue is right now in this society is cultural Marxism. I was speaking of it last week. I've got all this information all over the place here, and it's really hard for me to figure out where to even begin. I started to speak. I've kind of touched on topics over the last couple weeks that I never finished that well. As you're probably well aware, one of them I was talking of, okay, George Soros has his open society projects, okay? His society projects are, he donated $18 billion with a B to this open society project, which will fund $941 million a year towards the furtherment of essentially the philosophies of cultural Marxism handed down by the Frankfurt School and Saul Alinsky, okay? This open society believes in economic governance and advancement, okay? That's our money. And if you go over, okay, when Saul Alinsky discussed how to create a socialist state, you know, George Soros, his number one, he says economic governance, right? Well, that's money. Saul Alinsky's, he's got, you know, welfare, debt. At number three is debt. Number five is welfare. It's all money. Okay. Class warfare. It's all money. So George Soros knows it's all money. Number two, justice reform and the rule of law. It's the same thing. We've got in under Saul Alinsky's, it all falls under, you know, we've got, again, we've got religion, we've got class warfare, education, healthcare system. It's all the infrastructure, different ways to get at it. Equality and anti-discrimination is George Soros's number three principle. Well, we've got class warfare under Saul Alinsky's, you know, cultural Marxism, socialist state goals. Human rights movements and institutions, same thing. Class warfare, separation, education, democratic practices, number five. Health and human rights, health and rights, he says, which is, again, number one. Saul Alinsky says there are eight levels of control that must be obtained before you're able to create a socialist state. The first is the most important, health care. That is why Obama had to just ramrod and railroad Obamacare down the throats of Americans. He didn't, no one read it, no one knew. Can you imagine the left-wing socialist, populist, democratic, you know, party? What a bunch of radical communists. Folks, we used to have, you know, this, oh my gosh, this country, this poor country, Reagan, you know, was just bound and determined to prove that the Sandinistas were communist and that the freedom fighters, the Contras, were these great people that wanted democracy. They were all a mess. But Reagan was bound and determined to get rid of communism. He wanted to take down Russia. And so through the Iran-Contra affair, he was funneling drugs that we'd confiscated earlier that were being stored in Central America. He was funneling the drugs to the Russian mob at about 20 cents on the dollar so that the Russian mob could get big enough to help take down the communist Russian government. All this stuff is fact. There's a new movie out that's a little edgy but kind of fun. I love Tom Cruise, even though he's a Scientologist. New movie called American Made. Real interesting to me because in life I have tripped over a number of these people. I know a guy who, when he was 19 years old in California, was a phenomenal pilot. Not 19, when he was about 17. He was a phenomenal pilot. And he was in high school, and he flew a plane over. He buzzed a high school game, bringing the plane 35 feet off the field. He lost his pilot's license. He was still allowed to fly stunts in stunt shows. And after a stunt show, he heard a voice behind him say, "Hey, kid, do you want to get your pilot's license back?" And, of course, he looked and talked to the guy and said, "Yeah." And they said, "We get a hold of you." And they had him by, you know, until he was, I think, 19 or 20, flying packages, quote unquote, in and out of Central America in planes. And there's a lot that goes into that story. And one day, you know, it got more and more It got harder. Believe me, I know this guy personally. It's the truth. I know him. And he lives up in Alaska now. He owns an island up there. And he, so he got a call one day that said it's over. Well, that's right when all the Iran-Contra stuff and everything hit the news. He was working directly for Oliver North. They said it's over. Get rid of everything you have. He had a fishbowl, he said, full of lighters with airplane tail numbers written on the lighter, because they were giving him $600,000 planes at the time in the 80s. I think they were turbocharged twin-engine Queen Air. And at the time, $650,000 for a plane was unbelievable. I mean, by today's standards, it's probably about a $3 million plane at least. Probably more like four or five. And they would torch him. He'd land in such small areas he could never get out. And they said, if you can't get out, torch the plane. And they'd provide another one for him. He'd show up at a hangar and he'd have another one ready to go. So we went through all this. One day he got a, and then he'd get picked up in Jeeps and they'd take the packages and blah, blah, blah. And then one day he got a call and said, it's over. They said, get rid of all the evidence that you ever worked for us, which was, of course, the CIA and the government. He said he got rid of most of it, kept some of it. And then one day he had his own apartment, his parents' house he was in and out of. He said one day he came home. He knew someone had been through his house. They'd kind of gone through everything. They didn't do too much damage, but he could tell they'd gone through absolutely everything in the house. I think, and they did take a few more items from him. His parents said someone had been in their house. His parents knew he was working for the government, but they had no idea. And he claims not to have known what was in the packages. I don't know that I believe that. But anyway, so his parents got their house purged as well. The people only took stuff pertaining to evidence of his prior flying. He made $20,000 cash per flight. Shortly after that, his dad's trying to figure out what to do with the money, right? This was just after the time that the, Napa Valley wine had outperformed French wines for the first time ever. And Napa Valley had not taken off yet. So his dad told him to buy land in Napa Valley. He bought 200 acres for like $1,000 an acre back in whatever year it was. I don't know, 1982 or something. And years later, by 2004, five, right in there, the land was $1 million an acre. So his $200,000 investment had risen to $200 million. He began to sell some of it off. He was always a pilot his whole life, loved planes, bought a number of planes, started a charter business, flying planes and having other pilots, bought a huge island in Alaska that he worked out of and lived on, and then he started a big fishing business up there, and he does other things. He also has a great big winery going and everything. So the point of this is then after that came out this movie called Kill the Messenger by Jeremy Renner, where this reporter tripped over a case where they found out that there was over $1 billion in cash that had been flown out of the country by the CIA. So the CIA was smuggling in cocaine, having this great big drug pin sell it on the streets and then funnel the cash through the CIA and then back to Nicaragua. And they said that, you know, in this journalist that caught wind of it in a court case where the guy was testifying and the attorney general tried to stop him. And the judge said, look, you put him on the stand, and the guy gave up the ghost, gave up the information. And then this reporter just happened to be there for a different reason, got wind of this information, started to pursue it, and started to get the whole, you know, black suits in black cars showing up at his house at night, guys waking him up in the middle of the night with silencers stuck to his head, you know, saying, shut your mouth and quit talking, whatever. So they made him look crazy. And then another movie came out, I think, called The Interrogator. Same stories from a different angle. And now American Made. Same stories from a different angle. If you research all of them, in every case, they say, well, there's no evidence that the CIA was involved, you know, blah, 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 because they purged everything. They had burn bags. They cleaned everything up. It's how the CIA works. The CIA does everything orally, okay? Nothing in writing with any of their agents or subcontractors ever. That way there's no evidence of anything. So basically, there's all these different angles of the same story. They were doing incredible things, crazy things, breaking every law imaginable. Our own government. My point is, this is the extreme that Ronald Reagan was going to for the drug war, number one, and for this flushing out communism to destroy Russia. I mean, it just, we lose our minds. Absolute power corrupts, okay? We used to give our presidents a lot more leeway. Trump couldn't even bat an eye and do something like this. Now they're watching him so hard. But the point is, they wanted so bad communism. So now they've spun it around where we're begging for it. Now, how is that? They've repackaged it. So you've got George Soros, you know, through generation after generation, where they say about the 8 levels of control that Saul Alinsky says. You have, I'm trying to find the guy's name here that said it won't happen. Oh, where is it? Come on, give me a break. Give me a break. Sorry about that. Oh, I don't know. There's a real good quote from somebody. I know his name. It's Hockheimer, who basically says it's going to happen over time, that it isn't going to happen in a day or a week or a month. You know, the communists believe that you have a coup and that you are then run by the proletariat. And Willie Munzenberg said, we must organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, after they have corrupted all of its values and made life impossible, can we impose the dictatorship of the proletariat. Okay, that's, are they making life impossible? I think they're trying really hard. This is why they hate Trump. He was the great disruptor. I've discussed his name, Trump. What does it mean? Final overriding factor or resource. What is a Trump in the Bible? It is your last warning. It says wrath is coming, right? So that's what Trump was, the great disruptor, God's wedge of awakening for you and for me. Time to prepare, folks. I mean, granted, he's protecting this nation. He's under incredible spiritual attack. On paper, he may not look great in speeches. He may not be the most elegant. But I'll tell you what, he is the voice of God. I literally believe that the man is anointed by God, whether he wants to be or not. I believe that he's touched and blessed by God for some unknown reason. It's pretty obvious. Financially, he's rocked the world. You know, the guy's okay. And he whatever he speaks, he ends up being right every single time. He says the White House or the Trump Tower was wiretapped. Oh, they go crazy. He's so wrong. He's so full of baloney. And oh, no, what a kook. And he says, the election's rigged. What a kook. What a crazy. What a phony. And then, you know, Hillary's coming out attacking him and criticizing him. Oh, he's got to be willing to accept the results of a fair democratic election. And then, of course, she loses and she can't accept the results of an election from the people, so they have to create a false narrative about the Russians being involved, and then they're doing all these optic behaviors, in other words, to get good publicity and good press. They're arresting Paul Manafort for not properly disclosing money, which means he was getting big bucks overseas, and then he was funneling the money to the U.S. through buying things, very expensive, nice things. And they call it money laundering, when in reality, it's tax evasion. Money laundering is where you take dirty money and you turn it into clean money. His money wasn't dirty. He just didn't want to pay taxes. Now, I can't blame him. I will say, I mean, I don't like paying taxes either. I do pay every darn penny I owe, and probably and then some, because I, you know, haven't always done the best tax planning, trust me. But you know, it's no fun. The new Trump tax plan is interesting. I'll talk about that here. You know, we've got George Soros, folks. Frankly, there's a thing here by an organization I found that says George Soros, the most evil man on this planet. Okay. Now, when George Soros started this open society and put $18 billion in it, there's one reason he did that. so his legacy will never die. In case someone takes him out, in case he dies, his legacy will live on. It is funding Obama. I talked recently here when former President Obama said he was heartened by anti-Trump protests. He was sending a message of approval to his troops. He's got this over 30,000 of these people ready to roll to fight the Republican successor at every single turn of his historic presidency. And Obama commands them from a bunker, technically less than 2 miles from the White House. I mean, this is the most unusual post-presidency we've ever seen. Obama isn't just staying behind in Washington. He's working behind the scenes that to set up what will effectively be a shadow government, not only to protect his threatened legacy, but to sabotage the incoming administration in the Trump administration and their America First agenda. Okay? Obama said Obama's intimately involved in his own organization, obviously, and even tweets from the group's account. In fact, he gave marching orders to the OFA foot soldiers over and over again to protest Trump's people, to organize and protest everything you can imagine to create this disruption and mayhem. Obama's a quote, he said, it's fine for everybody to feel stressed, sad, and discouraged when Trump won. He said, but get over it. He demanded, move forward to protect what we've accomplished. Regain America for ourselves. He said, we need to strip America away from the radicals. In other words, he doesn't realize he's the radical, and gain it back for ourselves. So then he began to organize. And it basically, he brought his old aides. I'll try to keep it short and sweet. Federal tax records show nonpartisan OFA marshals, there's 32,525 of them nationwide, registered as a 501c4. I've discussed that. They've had over $300 million in contributions. That's pretty good. And anyway, so basically, he's working from a shadow White House located within 2 miles of Trump that has his own mansion, which he's fortified with construction of a tall brick perimeter in a nearby taxpayer-funded office with his own chief of staff and press secretary. Michelle Obama is also opening an office there. And then others for the Obama Foundation. So he's in full role. He wants to be president forever from a rebellious, an opposition party at a third world level with no respect or dignity for our system or the decisions of the people. He said he's not content to go quietly into the night like other ex-presidents. That's exactly what he said. Think about that. He said, you're going to see me, you're going to see even more of me next year, he told his troops, and we're going to be in a position where we can start cooking up all kinds of great stuff. He said, point is, I'm more fired up now, more fired up and ready to go now than I've ever been. Think about it. I mean, this is it, right? This is it. So then we got him. He's funded by Soros. Soros, they say, the most evil man on this planet. And then, this guy has been involved. If you wonder how significant this guy is, folks, he's responsible for the Arab Spring. You remember that? The Arab Spring, what was that? What is the Arab Spring? It's the comeback of Islam. It's this big awakening. It's an Islamic awakening. He wanted to bring the evil opposition, Americans' enemy, to their feet, fund them. Folks, Benghazi was about Obama funneling weapons that he had confiscated from Gaddafi, and he was transferring them to Syria, where we have the the leader of Syria, gassing his own people. ISIS training camps have safe haven, refuge there. Obama's behind it all. Obama got literally funded $500 million from a solicitation center in Gaza. No question. Fact. They didn't report it properly. They said the computers weren't working to report properly. Blah, 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 right? $500 million. Another $500 million, supposedly from the king of Saudi Arabia. What was Obama's first trip when he became president? Not only was it Saudi Arabia, he bowed below the navel of the king of Saudi Arabia. He granted authoritative submission to probably the most powerful Muslim man on earth. This is what the Arab Spring was. Obama knew that Islam needed an uprising. They needed to be united. They needed to be infused with cash. Folks, Hamas, Hezbollah, he gave them more money than ever before. They had been in, Hamas had been in existence from the 60s. Obama gave them more money in one fell swoop than they have accumulated in their entire existence at that point for 40-some years. He gave them nearly $500 million. Why nearly $500 million? Because that's what they got him. They gave it back to them. They got donations. He gave them the money. They've armed themselves to a level never before. Why did Obama not move in on ISIS? Because he wanted to give them time to build up. He wants this stuff, folks. This is necessary. Obama is committed to the destruction of America. I don't care if he was president and he's gone now. This is a fact, and this is what he shares with George Soros. George Soros started the Arab Spring and funded it. George Soros created the Ukrainian Revolution. He created these false anti-Trump protests. He's responsible for refugee invasions on Europe, for getting these Muslims to infiltrate the fatwa, to fill up these nations, to overtake them in population growth jihad. Ferguson protests, that stupid, you know, Michael Brown story that was so off base. He started Black Lives Matter. He's funding it. Here's how the way his revolutions are working. He pays somebody to protest. Then he pays others, snipers, provocateurs, to kill or beat them. Literally, he does this. There's about a 95% chance in my mind that he's behind the Vegas shooting. All the evidence is scant. It's false. It's bad. Hard drives disappearing. Timelines are messed up. No history on Stephen Pollock or whatever his name was. Nothing. People say that that end unit of each of the Mandalay Bay, that very end suite, had access to utilities shaft in and out of that room. People heard drilling. You know, it was an M240 machine gun, which was never found there. They had all these guns laying all over, so they didn't have evidence of the actual gun to compare, you know, the rifling with. So he hires any, you know, the where they had the white supremacists attacking, you know, all that, Charlottesville. He funded all that, brought in the buses. So he creates more and more violence until a government is overthrown, while the media always cover just one side. He is wanting to turn America to ashes. We need to be aware of this, folks. Cultural Marxism. I mean, you've got these crazy Antifa group I talked about. Statues of Lenin, you know, the communist, you know, murderer in Russia. It's okay to have statues of Vladimir Lenin in downtown Seattle, but don't you dare put up a statue now of George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Christopher Columbus, Robert E. Lee, our great heroes of this nation. The victors write the history books. Truth is the first casualty of war, folks. You got to watch. I'm getting so frustrated with Google searches now. You can't find anything. It has been purged, scrubbed, and scourged. It's unbelievable. They see no problem. Facebook's doing the same thing. If you only accept the media side, the media narrative of any major political event, you are being lied to, and you will be wrong most of the time. Cultural Marxism is alive and well. The quote I was looking for by Max Horkheimer, he said, "The revolution will not happen with guns. Rather, it happens incrementally, year by year, generation by generation. We will gradually infiltrate their educational institutions and political offices, transforming them slowly into Marxist entities as we move towards universal egalitarianism." When I met John Boehner and all these scandals were going on, the IRS scandal, the Fast and Furious scandal, whatever other scandals were going on at the time, he told me those were the tip of the iceberg. There were many more, but he said they couldn't come out with them because no matter when they started to do research, he said he had everyone in Congress trying. They were hitting brick walls at every Department of State, everything, because he said his terms weren't this, but I call them secret societies. He was telling me that they have people that are planted there that they pick out as children, high-performing young minorities typically, that they go to the families that are poor and they say, "Your child's exceptional. We want to put them in this special program." And they list the names of people who've been in the program, and the parents' eyes pop out of their head, and they go, "This is the most amazing thing. I knew my little Sherry was so amazing." Or maybe it's more like, "I knew my little Shaniqua had special talent. My Kendra," you know, whatever. And they go to these special schools, and they get brainwashed in extreme liberalism. And then from there, these secret societies, they put them through the finest Ivy League schools, and they get them to specialize in one line of law. And then they place them in opportunely picked areas of government so that and there's people already in above them to open those doors and let them in. Then later on, when things like investigations need to take place, there's brick walls everywhere. Folks, they really have infiltrated us. I'm sorry to tell you the truth. You know, you look at, Saul Alinsky's debt, he says, increase the debt levels to unsustainable levels. That way you're able to increase taxes, which will produce more poverty. They know taxes produce poverty. Do not fall for the lie any other way. I don't care if you're left, right, upside down, sideways, or backwards. Don't buy the lie that taxes somehow help. Obama would spin this stupid stuff where he would try to say paying taxes makes you richer. I mean, just dumb. People would buy it. The media would repeat it. And what's Joseph Goebbels? Tell a lie long enough the people believe it. The bigger the lie, the easier they'll believe it. This is all part of the game, folks. It's like, consider me the watchman on the wall. Here we are. Now, what do you do about it? What do you do? Folks, I'm telling you, we've got supposed, you know, stock markets going out of control. Construction's running rampant. Collectibles are firing up. Why? Because people need something to do with their money. But I'll tell you what, if you are in paper this or paper that, get out. I'm warning you, get out. And I'll tell you the last thing, hindsight investing, kill it. Well, if I would have put my money back in, you know, such and such stock in 2008, boy, today I'd have 12 times, you know, whatever. You didn't do it. You wouldn't have done it. When it went up, you would have sold it. You wouldn't have bought at the bottom like you think you would have. Just forget about it. Do what God in the Bible says. Hard assets, gold, silver, livestock, real estate, human life, precious stones. And I don't think you're going to become a cattle farmer. And I don't think you're going to buy a income-producing ranch. Money, gold and silver are money. Folks, it was even to the point John F. Kennedy was abolishing the Federal Reserve with Executive Order 11110. LBJ had him done in, I believe. I really do. And folks, the CIA does everything imaginable, and then they deny it, and people go, then the mainstream media wants to cover up every potential conspiracy. No. He was going to abolish the Fed. put us back on the gold standard, make it the way our founding fathers wanted it to be. And now the twists and spinning I was reading this weekend, boy, if you don't understand, if you don't have a higher level of reading ability, wow, can they spin and confuse you? I'm just like, what am I reading? And, you know, I mean, you got to be so careful with the lies and deception we're surrounded by. I'm sorry, folks, but I hope you're, you know, really good at absorptive analysis, because getting the truth is becoming very difficult. But you do have one book, the Bible, that gives you the truth. Go there, read it, understand what God says. Just do it. Don't get a speculatively foolish mindset. Just preserve and protect. People say, well, metals aren't going up real fast, so they're not going down either. They're solid. They're brick solid. You know, paper assets are a train wreck. I mean, they're so high, and they're founded on nothing. God made a system that works. You want to bet on the Federal Reserve system that's racked up so much debt and followed all these things with health care, poverty, debt, gun control? We didn't even get to the shootings this weekend, or the fact that Rand Paul got beat up by his neighbor, five cracked ribs as he sits in the hospital, and the local police gave the guy fourth-degree assault, which is the same as pushing someone down. So anyway, folks, give us a call. Let us take care of you. Get your money preserved now. You're going to regret it if you don't. I hate to be that way, but I'm sincere. Anyway, time's up. I love you. Take care. God bless. We'll be back Wednesday. Bye-bye.